Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav Chei. We're right at the top line here. Omar Bar Hamduri, Omar Shmuel. So Bar Hamduri, that was his name. He said in the name of Shmuel, Krumiyo Shal Machtzelis. These splinters of a machtzelis, of a mat, or a mat which broke apart. Mutul Tatlon B'Shabbos. One may be metatal these splinters on Shabbos, because they're still considered a kli, they're useful for something. My time, why? Amarava Barham Duri Asbroli. Barham Duri himself actually explained to me the reason of this halacha. Machtzelos Gufa, the mat itself. Lamai Chazia. Generally, when we speak about a mat, we're speaking about a mat made of reeds. So, what is it suitable for? L'chsuya be Afra, to cover with it earth. Rashi says to cover waste. So that's the function of the machzelas. You can use it for that. Hani nami, these as well, these pieces, chazian are still suitable lechsuyebu tenoifus, to cover with them something repulsive, so still regarded as useful, and therefore it is not muktzan Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Omer Abzeira, Omer Rab, shiyori pruz miyois, the remnants of garments, so these material scraps, also taltum on Shabbos, one may not move them on Shabbos. Omer Abayi, we're speaking about very small scraps, matlonios, these scraps which aim behem gimel al gimel, which don't have a size of 3 etzbois by 3 etzbois, therefore they're not suitable lelaniyim, not for paupers who can't even use these as patches. They're too small. Veloy lashirim, and certainly not for wealthy people. Therefore, they're considered to be useless. They're not considered to be a kli, and they're muktzah on Shabbos. Tanur rabban shivrei tanur yashan. What if we have the broken pieces of a previously used oven? So Rashi says the oven was already heated, and it's the wall. It's speaking about a cheres, right? Earthenware oven, earthen oven. So it's already heated, and it becomes hardened and galvanized. So now even the pieces are still usable. Harayin kuchal akelim on atom bechotzer. So these shvarim, these pieces of the tanur cheres, can be moved in a chotzer. They're still useful. Divirame. Rabbi Yehuda, I may ain't it on. One may not move them because they're not considered to be kelim. The Gemara will soon explain the reason, the basis for their disagreement. Continues the Braise. Hey, Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Yosi testified Meshum Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, in the name of Elazar ben Yaakov, Al Shivrei Tanur Yoshan Shin Tol B'Shabbos. Then indeed one may move these broken pieces of a tanur. Number two, he said, Val Kisuyoy, the lid of a tanur, She'en Etzorach Be'Siyad. One can move it even though it doesn't have a handle. So this is a discussion later on Daf Kuf Chav Vav, that the lid of a kli certainly can be moved despite the fact it doesn't have a handle. It's a lid of a kli. What about the lid of a in-ground pit? That requires a handle because that looks like it has to do with binyan. We're going to see it looks like he's building. So unless it has a handle, it appears as though he's actually adding something to the ground. Whereas this tanner is somewhere in the middle. An oven, as we're going to see soon, it's a kli, but it's generally attached to the ground. So it's a kli, it's mechubel karka, and the question is that the lid of a tanner is a lid of a kli, but it's mechubel karka. Does that need to have a handle to allow moving around this lid? So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, there's no need to have a handle. One can move it even without a beis yad. Okay, let's go back to the discussion regarding the broken parts of a tanur. We spoke about shivrei tanur yashan, the broken pieces of a tanur made of cheres, of earthenware, and it's broken up. The question is whether it's muktzah or not. Remeah says it's not muktzah. Rabbi Yehuda says one cannot move it. Says the Mishnah, well, what is the basis of their dispute? Amar Abaye, ba'oisim be'im alocha. If these broken pieces still can function somewhat, they do somewhat of a malacha, of a function. For instance, you can use it to cover a vat, a barrel. So it performs in some capacity. However, they can't perform in the same capacity as they initially did, meaning the current use doesn't resemble its original function. You can't bake in these broken pieces. So that's the question here. But oisim ein malacha. Both of them, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, both compatible. They're following their respective opinions. As we mentioned earlier in the Mishnah of Kuf Chav Dalet, the Yehuda requires that the Shever, the broken piece, should have the ability to function. Its current function should resemble its initial, its original function. Otherwise, it becomes nullified. It's not regarded as a kli. Whereas according to the Tanakama, who's Reb Meir, he holds that as long as it's serving some capacity, it's doing a melacha. For instance, these pieces of pottery which can be used to cover a chavis, that's sufficient to give it, to classify it as a shem kli, and therefore it's not muktzah. So that's the basis of this disagreement here regarding the broken pieces of a tanur yashan. According to Reb Meir, it can be moved. According to Reb Yehuda, it cannot. Says the Gemara, Maskev lo Rava. So Rava asked, Yoch, if that's the case, Adamiflagi b'shivrei tanur. So why do they need to have a machlekes regarding a broken tanur? Liflagu b'shivrei kelim. They should have their disagreement regarding a broken kli, an ordinary kli. Why specifically a tanur? This discussion applies to any broken kli that can still be used in somewhat of a capacity, but not in a way which resembles its initial function. So why discuss a tanur? Liflagu b'shivrei kelim bi'alma. Says Gemara, Elama Rava. This is the pshat in their machlekes. B'shivrei de'ahai tanur kamiflagi. They're discussing the broken pieces of this specific, this particular type of tanner, as we're going to find in the following Mishnah. The Snan, as we learned in the following Mishnah, about a tanner which wasn't, initially, it wasn't really heated up properly, halachically, it wasn't heated up properly. And the question is, regarding that tanner that broke apart, what is the status of its broken pieces? Let's see. The Snan, as we learned in the Mishnah. Nosnoi al pi haboyer. If you place the tanner on the mouth of a pit, or a piadus on top of a different type of pit, v'nosan shem evan, and he placed a rock there to wedge the tanner in place. Let's take a look at Rashi, who describes for us in detail what's going on here. So Rashi here comes out 20 lines from the top of the Amud, beginning with the words, nosnay al pi habor. So Rashi describes the old-fashioned oven, tanurin shem lahem, their tanner, were asuyin kikderes gedeles, were fashioned like large pots of englem shulayim, which were bottomless. Umayshivin la'aretz, he places them on the earth. Umadibik titzvivaysav, then he adds some clay or cement around the tanner. Lasay say of, to make the, to thicken the walls of the tanner, shiachsek chaymes, that maintains its heat. Vikri tfela, that's called the tfela, the addition of the tanner. Himagas la'aretz, that cement reaches down to the earth below, so it seals the connects the tanner to the ground, seals it, and as a result, the hevel, the heat, is maintained in the oven. Now, let's say he didn't do this; he didn't actually attach it to the ground. Rather, he took the tanner, which is this bottomless utensil, and put it onto the piaboyr or piadus. He suspended it on the mouth of the boir or the dus, she came boir. So the boir is a pit underground, and a dus is like a boir, elosha boir b'chafiro of a dus b'binyan. A boir is below ground, it's dug into the ground. A dus is b'binyan, is, Rashi says it's made with, it's built. So some explain this to mean that it's above ground. Rashi seems to think that it's, seems to say that the dus is also below ground, but it's actually, it has some walls, not just a pit in the ground, but there's some walls to that pit. In any case, he took the tanner and put it onto the mouth, on top of the bor and the dus. But also shem even beinoy lebein doifin habor, and he placed a stone. He wedged the stone between the oven and the wall of the bor. The doichay to squeeze it shleipol so it doesn't fall down. V'yehei oimed ba'aver, so he squeezes it in place and suspends it up there midair. So he didn't actually attach it to the ground, but he suspended it on the boir and the dus. Let's get back to the Gemara. This is the second wide line. The snan, nosna pia boir al pia dus, but also shem evan. So he placed the tanner on the boir and the dus with a stone. What is the status here? How do we regard this tanner? Rabbi Doimer, imasik milamata. If, when he heats down below, all the way on the bottom floor of this pit, when he does that, when he lights the fire down there, v'unisik melamala, and by doing so, the tanner above gets properly heated, tell me, then this is regarded as an ordinary taner, and it's tame because it's functioning together with the ground below, the fire down below on the bottom of the pit properly heats up the taner. It's regarded as though the taner is connected to the ground, it's functioning with the ground, therefore has a status classified as a proper taner. The imlav, but otherwise, meaning the fire down below doesn't properly heat up the taner. Rather, they need to place the fire within the taner. Somehow they lift the fire off the ground. Maybe they make a makeshift floor to this taner, or perhaps they put the fire on a... they lift it by placing it on a rock. In any case, the fire needs to be lifted into the cavity of the taner itself. It can't make use of the fire down below. Then tar. This taner is tar. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi here is... So we have the wide lines of Rashi. So five lines above the wide lines, Rashi begins with the words v'imlav. So the fire down below doesn't effectively heat the tanur properly. Ela nisa kishar tanur mitoichan. Rather, this tanur needs to be heated within the cavity of the tanur itself, like other tanurim, which have the fire within the tanur itself. Tar. Then it's called, then it's tar. The fire is taimur. As the Gemara explained, the be'inan mechusan atitza. Because in order for the tanur to be regarded, to be classified as a proper tanur, to be mekabel tuma, it needs to be mechusan atitza, meaning that it needs to have a potential of demolishing it. It needs to be able to be demolished. Because the pasuk we're going to see soon describes the taner that becomes tamei as requiring netitza, needs to be demolished. So only something which is attached to the ground can be demolished. So Rashi says, since it needs that potential netitza, she'ekor of lias mechuba, needs to be close as possible to being connected to the ground. However, if it's not curved to the ground, you don't have no greater demolished tanner than this, meaning it's removed from the ground. You can't demolish it any longer. And you can't any longer fulfill the pasuk which says that a tanner and a kiraim, a certain type of stove, should be demolished. Because the concept of demolishing only applies to something which is attached to the ground. The netitza loy shaycha, this concept of demolishing is only possible, can only be applied to a attached structure. When something is not attached, the concept of breaking is applicable to it. So this tana, which is not properly being heated by the fire down below, it's not regarded as really connected to the ground. It's not really functioning with the ground below. Therefore, it's considered as though it's detached from the ground. It's an ordinary kli. And therefore, it can't be mekabel tumah, since the concept of netitza, of demolishing, doesn't apply to this. Let's get back to the Gemara. So once again, Rabbi Yehuda says, in masik malamata, when he heats up on the bottom, all the way on the ground below, v'hu nisik malamala, that affects properly the taner, it gets properly heated up on top, tameh, then we regard this taner as though it's connected properly to the ground, and it is mekabel tumah. Vim lav, but otherwise, if you have a separate fire up above, inside the taner, it's not functioning together with the ground, it's not considered to be a mechuber to the ground, it's functioning independently of the ground, tar, therefore, it is not regarded as the proper taner, kem mekabel tumah. No, there's no need to be attached to the ground. Since it got heated in any way, meaning even though it's not being properly heated from the fire down below, it's not regarded as really connected to the ground, needs its own independent fire. It's regarded as though it's detached from the ground, it's functioning independently. Still, its tamei is considered to be a proper tamei. So this is the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, what is the pshat in this machlekes? What is this based on? So we have a clue. Rashi already gave us an advance clue here. Ubamaika Mifliki. What is the basis for their disagreement? Bahaikra, with regard to the following pasuk. How are we meant to interpret the following pasuk? Tanur v'kiraim yutat tmeim heim u'tmeim yulochem. So the tanur and the kiraim should be demolished. Tmeim heim there. Tamei tmeim yulochem. So Rabbi Yehuda savar mechusa netitza tamei. When something is lacking netitza, meaning it can potentially be demolished, and that's considered to be the taner that the Torah is discussing. She'ein mechusa netitza, but something which cannot be demolished, which is not lacking demolishing tar, then that's not called the taner that can be mekabel tumah. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says only a taner which is attached to the ground, which is serving with the ground below, is considered to be a taner with regard to kabbalas tumah. But otherwise, it's tar. For Rabbanu Savri, we have a ribu here. The pasuk adds some words. Tmei yulachem. The pasuk here is coming to include something in addition to that Tana which is attached to the ground. And we learn from him, Mikol Makom. In any event, meaning any Tana is Tama, even if it's detached from the ground. So the Pasuk has come to be Marbe, even in this case. Says the Gemara, Rabbana Nami Hok Siv Yutas. Now, even according to the Rabbana, but the Torah specifically says Yutas, which indicates that only a Tana which is attached to the ground has the potential for Tuma. So what do they do with that Pasuk? Says the Gemara, just the opposite. Hahu Li'idachis. That Pasuk, that part of the Pasuk is actually coming just in the other direction, in the exact opposite direction. Meaning, the ideal oven, the ideal tanner, is really an oven which is detached from the ground, which is not mechubal karka. Generally speaking, only something which is off the ground is mekabel tumah. An attached structure, a house, a building, is not mekabel tumah. So the ideal tanner is really something which is off the ground, removed from the ground. The pasuk is going to add something and tell us, well, I want you to know, even if it is attached to the ground, even then it's tamei. It's not like an ordinary house, because as we said earlier, a tanner is that in-between stage. It's a kli, which is attached to the ground. It's not like a house, which is just a house. It's not a kli. This is a kli, but attached to the ground. So it has that in-between status. And the Torah is going to be marvin and include, yes, even this thing which is attached to the ground, even kabbal tumah. So that is the ribu of the pasuk. Says the Gemara, Ahul Idachisa, the beginning of the pasuk which speaks about a tanner which requires demolishing, meaning an attached tanner which has a potential for tumah, is in the opposite direction. The Torah is telling us, you should know even that is mekabel tumah. The Salka Daitachamina, perhaps I would say, Kivin the Chabri Ba'ara, since he attached to the ground, Kigufa Da'ara Dami, it is regarded like the actual ground, it's like a house, like a building, like an attached structure, and it can't be mekabel tumah. Kamash Malon, the pasuk needs to inform us, yes, even an attached tanner is mekabel tumah. So the Rabbanan go in the exact opposite direction of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the ideal tanner is only one which is attached to the ground. But something off the ground is not mekabel tumah. Whereas the Rabbanan say just the opposite. The ideal tanner is really the independent one, the mobile one, the portable one, like any other kli. So it's going to add to us and say, well, even one which is attached to the ground is mekabel tumah as well. V'idach nami. Now, what about Rabbi Yehuda? Haksiv tmei miulachem. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the pasuk of tmei miulachem, which comes to add something? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda uses that for the following halach. Ahi, that pasuk is Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo. Will teach us as Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo told us. Dom Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo, machlokes v'esek rishon. Rabbi Yehuda Mashmo will give us a new understanding, a new perspective to this machlokes. This whole discussion, this whole machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda requires attached to the ground, properly attached, properly serving with the ground, as opposed to the Chachamim who speak about a portable tanner. That's only when it comes to Hesek Rishon, the initial heating of the tanner. As Rashi brings the Mishnah and Kalim, that in order for a tanner to be regarded as a kli, to be mekabel tumah, it needs to have that initial heating, the Hesek Rishon. Rashi says it has to be heated up sufficiently to be able to use it, le'efes by sufganim, to bake within it these sufganim, some type of donuts. So that renders it a kli, that classifies it as a kli. So it's regarding that initial heating, that initial hesek, that they are discussing, that they are having a machlekes. Rabbi Yehuda says, you need to properly render this a tanner. It needs to be during that hesek rishon attached to the ground. You need to have it firmly attached and servicing, functioning with the ground below, as he learns from the pasuk, it needs to have that potential netitza, potential demolishing. When? Only strictly during that first hesek. When you come to classify, you want to render it, you make it into a tanner, it needs to be properly functioning. As we said earlier, a tanner which is properly insulated and properly surrounded, properly smeared, that's the ideal tanner. That's functioning properly. And that is required by that first hesek. That gives it a status of a tanner. Avo behesek sheni. But regarding the second hesek, meaning the subsequent uses of this tanner, once it's been rendered a tanner, it's been heated for the first time, all agree, afilu toli betzavar gomel. Even if you're hanging it up on it's hanging on a tzavar, a neck of a gomel, a camel, and you're using it there, You're making some type of fire down below and heating it up, or you're lifting the fire, whatever you're doing, but it's off the ground, it's portable, it's mobile. All agree? It's going to be mekabel tumah going forward. So the question is only the initial, regarding the initial hesek, the initial heating, when it's rendered into a kli, there is the machlekes. Rabbi Yehuda says, it needs to be at that point attached to the ground. What happens afterwards, it's okay. It doesn't have to be attached any longer, because once it has the shame kli, it retains that status going forward, even if it's attached from the ground. Whereas the Chacham say, even during that hesek rishon, there's no requirement for it to be attached to the ground, even if he heats it for the first time, suspended somewhere up in the air, that's okay. Just the opposite. According to the Chachamim, a tana which is mobile, which is portable, like an ordinary kli, there's all the more reason for it to be mekabel tumah, like a regular kli. And therefore the Chacham say that, based on the pasuk, of course, that the pasuk of Tmeim Yulachem, that's the ribui, that's coming to add even a portable tanner. But indeed, that's the ideal tanner. And the pasuk goes ahead and tells us tanner v'kraim yutatz, to tell you even a tanner which is attached to the ground and requires that netitza, demolishing, that also is tamid. So that's a chiddush. So Rabbi Yehuda works this way, that ideally you have a tanner attached to the ground. And the Chacham worked the other way. Ideally, the ideal tanner is detached. Okay, even if it's attached, the Torah says that as well, kibim kabel tumah. Continues the Gemara, v'amar ula, v'hesek rishon, regarding that first initial heating, l'rabbanan, according to Shitz Rabbanan, afilu tole b'tzavar gomel, even if it's hung on the neck of a camel, and that's where the first heating process took place, that's when it's rendered as a kli, that's sufficient. According to Rabban, even in that case, even in that situation, the tanner becomes a tanner. Let's stop for a moment and just take stock of what's going on. So we have Rabbi Yehuda, we have the Rabbanon, we have a pasuk. On the one hand, beginning with the words tanner v'kraim yutatz, indicating that this tanner needs to be something which can be demolished, something which is attached to the ground, mechubel karka. We have the other wording in the pasuk of tmeim yulachem, which appears to be adding something to include even a tanner which is detached. So you have two approaches to the pasuk. On the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda says that, yeah, the ideal tanner is the properly functioning tanner, which is attached to the ground, where it maintains its heat, is probably insulated. So the pasuk begins by saying, well, the ideal tanner is the one which is attached to the ground, and indeed, you need to be mechuber lekarka during that hesek rishon, during that initial heating, when this tanner is becoming a kli, it's being rendered and classified as a tanner. The second part of the pasuk, which says, even a tanner which is tallish is tamei, and speaking about, well, once the hesek rishon took place, the subsequent usages can take place even when the tanner is portable or mobile. According to Rabban, work the other direction, that the ideal tanner is a detached tanner, because that's like an ordinary kli. Generally speaking, something which is mechubel lekarka is not mekabel tumah. So the ideal tanner is the one learned from the words tmeim yulachem, the tanner which is tolish, which is tamei. And even if the first heating, the first hesek took place when the tanner was removed from the ground, was hanging on the camel, that's okay. That becomes a tanner. The first part of the pasuk which indicates that we're speaking about a tanner which is mechubel karka, that's a chiddush. The pasuk is coming to add that as well, even if it's mechubel karka, it will be mekabel tumah. So it's not like a house which can't be mekabel tumah. This is different because it's a kli. So although it's connected to the ground, but it's a kli of mechubel karka, it turns to be mechalish to us. That's this kibib kabotum. Okay, so we have this discussion regarding the tanner between Yehuda and Rabban. Now, how did this come into play here? Because Rab explained that the discussion earlier regarding the shivrei tanner between Rab Meir, says that those broken pieces of the tanner, broken pottery, are considered to be like kalim because they're still useful, and Rabbi Yehuda says that the broken pieces of that tanner are not regarded as kalim. So Rava says, we're speaking about this particular tanner. We're speaking about a tanner which was initially heated, you know where? Up in the air, suspended up in the air, not properly attached to the boiler. As Rabbi Yehuda says, the fire on bottom didn't properly, effectively heat the tanner. We weren't speaking about a tanner which was properly attached to the ground. It wasn't functioning with the ground. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, This is not a properly heated tanner. It's not considered like a tanner, as opposed to the Rabbanan, who regard this tanner as an ordinary tanner. So, Rabbi explained that this tanner that broke apart, according to Rav Meir, it's regarded like broken pieces of an ordinary tanner, and they're suitable for use, they have function, and therefore, one can move them on Shabbos. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, this tanner wasn't properly heated ever. It wasn't regarded as a kli, and therefore the broken pieces of this tanner are mukta. Says the Gemara, Maske flor Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi asked, Iyachi, if that's the case, Ad Miflagi be a shivri tanner. So once we speak about broken pieces of a tanner, instead of discussing broken pieces of this tanner, Liflagu be tanner gufa. Why don't they have their discussion in their machlekes? The Ramei and the Rabbi Yehuda should have a machlekes regarding the tanner itself. Meaning that the tanner itself, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not a kli. And certainly the broken parts of this tanner are not a kli. Well, according to Rabbi Meir, this tanner, which was heated somewhere up in the air, is regarded as a proper kli. And therefore, one can move the tanner itself. So why discuss the broken pieces of this tanner? Discuss the tanner itself. Ad miflagi b'shiver tanner. Instead of discussing the broken parts of this tanner, liflagu b'tanner gufa. Let them discuss the actual tanner that wasn't heated properly for the first time. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not a kli, because if it wasn't properly attached to the ground at that initial heating, then the tanner didn't heat properly, it didn't galvanize properly, the earth didn't strengthen properly, and therefore it's not considered to be a kli. And according to Rabbi Meir, it is considered to be a kli, it is regarded as a proper tanner, and therefore one can move it on Shabbos. Hash the tanner gufli Rabbi Yehuda lehavamana. If the tanner itself, a whole tanner, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not a kli, shvar v'mbayit, do you need to discuss the broken parts of this tanner? Certainly, it's not regarded as a kli, and it's muktzah. So why discuss the broken pieces? Discuss the kli itself. It's a great achidish, that even the entire tanner, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not a kli, and according to Rabbi Meir, is a kli. Elam Rav Ashi, we must reinterpret that discussion. Lo'olam kedamar mikar, certainly a proper way is the way we initially interpreted the machlekes regarding the broken pieces of a tanner yashan, a properly preheated tanner. So there's no discussion regarding the status of the tanner. This tanner was properly heated, whether according to Rabbi Yehuda, attached to the ground, according to Rabbanan. In any case, there's no discussion regarding the status of the tanner. We're speaking about a broken pieces of a proper tanner. Now the point here is that the broken pieces are functioning in what capacity? Uba'oisa masa tafka. Now one can use these pieces to bake with them. Tafka is a shingle. And this explains why they specifically were discussing a broken oven. Rabbi Meir was relating to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion with regards to broken kalim. He wanted to make a point. He wanted to point something out. According to you, I want to point something out. Lididi, according to me, according to my opinion, afilu ba'isim ei malacha. As long as the broken pieces can serve in some capacity, even if they can be used to cover a chavis, that's sufficient to be regarded as a shame kli in the namukts. Ela lididach, however, according to you, you require that the broken parts should have the ability to function currently in a manner which resembles somewhat their initial functioning, right? So according to you, oideli mia, agree with me, concede to me at least the chaygavna malachtayu, that this form of function is considered to be malachtay. You can use it for baking. So this should be considered to be a kli, even according to you. Rabbi Yehuda responds, Rabbi Yehuda loydam. He says, there's no comparison. You can't compare these broken pieces of a tanner to the initial tanner. Why? Hasam, by the initial oven, has seikim b'fnim. How do you heat it? You put the fire in the tanner. Hacha, however, over here, seikim b'chutz. The heating takes place outside. You put the fire underneath the broken cheres. So it's serving in a different capacity, in a different manner. Hasam umad, by the ordinary tanner, it bakes standing up upright. They used to paste the dough on the vertical walls of the tanner. So that's how it baked. Hachalav umad, over here, it's not standing up, it's lying flat. So it's serving in a different capacity. It's viewed as a different function, and therefore, it is no longer considered a kli. So in summary, we learned several halachas regarding those shreds of the machtzelas of the mat, since they're suitable to cover with them something offensive, something repulsive, afar. As the Gemara says, they're mutar because they're still functioning. What about the remnants of a garment? Those little scraps of material which are too small to be used, they're not roi, and therefore they're asr. Now, regarding the kli, what about the broken pieces of a tanner? So, these pieces can still serve even in a capacity of baking in some way. So we have this machlekes. Rameh says, one can go ahead and remove these pieces because they're still functioning, and certainly in this case, they're functioning even better. They can actually be used for baking. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, since the manner of baking on these pieces differs significantly from the manner in which you bake in an oven, it's not considered to be that they're doing mei melach ton, that they can't function. It resembles its initial function, and therefore is regarded as a non-kli, and they're muktzah. Continues the Gemara. Hey, Rabbi Yossi testified in the Mishnah of Elazar Yaakov, Al Shivri Tanner Yashan, the broken pieces of a old Tanner, Shaltan B'Shabbos, when we move them on Shabbos, Val Kisuyoi, and regarding the lid of a Tanner Shein Tzarech Besyad, you don't require a handle to allow it moving on Shabbos. Omer Avina, Keman Metatalinan, Ha'idna Kisuyoi Edit Tanuri, according to whose Shita, Do we move the today hodnim is now today kisui the tanure, the lids of the ovens, the mata machasia of this town mata machasia, the elam besachiza, which do not feature a handle, kiman according to Karazim Yaakov, who allows one to move around the lid and place them on the oven. There's no concern of boina because it is a lid of a kli, even though a tanner is mechubel karka, but the tanner is a kli which is mechubel karka, so there's no concern of binyan. It's regarded as a lid of a kli. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'even shebe kiruya. So this stone which is placed in the kiruya, this is the hollowed out pumpkin which is used as a bucket, as a pail to draw water from the well. So this hollow pumpkin would float. So they need to weigh it down with a weight. So they put this stone in it. So it's a question of muktzah here. Im malambav ein nefelis, if when they use the pail, they fill with it, the stone remains intact. Rashi says it was tied, it was fastened properly to the pail here, so it doesn't fall out. Malambav, one can fill, use the pail, because the fact that it's fastened properly to the pail makes the stone as part of the pail. It's regarded as a kli, and it's not muktzah. Vim lav, but otherwise, if when you use the pail, the stone slips out, it's not properly fastened. Eim malma, will we not fill with this pail on Shabbos because the stone is muktzah? Not only that, Rashi points out that the pail, this pumpkin, is actually also muktzah because it's a basis l'davar aser. It's a support for the stone which is muktzah. Continues the Mishnah with the second halacha. Zmeira, this is a vine branch sheikshur b'tafiach, which is tied to a small pach. Rashi says a small container being used as a pail here. Mimalim b'Shabbos, who may fill with this container on Shabbos, because the zmeira, this branch, is considered a kli because it's tied to the pach. Third halacha in the Mishnah, pkak haloin. We have this window shutter, so pkak usually means a plug. So this window pane, this shutter. So they used to remove it when they wanted to make use of the window and then put it back in place. Rashi later will tell us that this chaloin, this window, is actually up in the ceiling, some sort of skylight. So what is the halacha regarding going ahead and putting this pkak back in its place? Is it regarded like building? Reb Lezer Omer, depends. Bizman shu kosher. So when this shutter is actually tied to the building vitoli and it's suspended, it's not dragged on the floor, then it appears like it's a window shutter. It appears like it's meant to be used for that, and it's still connected to that. It's not like bringing something over here and closing up the hole. Poiking gabay, one may use it to shutter the window. Vim lavar, otherwise, ain't poiking gabay, one may not use it. In either case, poking by, one may use it, one may plug the window, there's no concern. Continues the Gemara Tanan Hasam, we learned later on in the Maseches Shabbos, a Mishnah, Evan Shalpia Chavis, the stone which is sitting on the mouth covering the Chavis, the barrel. Now he needs to take out some of the content, he wants to pour out some wine. Matal Tzida, so he tips the Chavis off to the side, tips it over, Vinei Feles, and thus the stone falls off. It doesn't actually directly touch the stone, which is muktzah. Now Rashi points out that the sugi over there says that, let's say the stone, the chavis is actually surrounded by other barrels and he can't tip it over because the stone will go break the other ones. So the Gemara tells us that he can actually pick up the barrel and take it out of the area and tip it over in that manner. Continues the Gemara, Omar Rabba, Omar Rab Ami, Omar Rab Yechanan. So Rabba says the name of Ami and the name of Yechanan. Lo Yishanu. This halacha of allowing one to actually lift the chavis, take it out of the area, take it out from between the other barrels and then tip it, that is only allowed Ella B'Shechech. When the person inadvertently, he forgets and leaves the stone on the barrel, in which case the barrel doesn't become a buses, it's not meant as a support for the stone which he simply forgot there. Avo b'miniach, but if he purposely places the stone on the barrel, he's using it as a lid, as a cover. Nase buses davar aser. In this case, the chavis itself, the barrel itself is muktzah because it's a buses, it's serving as a support for davar aser, for the stone. So this is the opinion of Rabba, in the name of Rav Ami, that even though he placed the stone, he wants to use it as a lid, it retains its muksa status, it's not regarded as a kli. Not only that, the chavis itself becomes muksa. Rav Yosef on Rav Asi and Rav Yechanan, this is an opposing view, Rav Yosef, in the name of Rav Asi, and then Rav Yechanan said, Lo Yishanu Ela B'Sheichech. This halacha, that he needs to actually tip the chavis, but he can't directly associate with the rock itself. He can't directly touch the rock because it's mukta. It's only b'sheichech. And one forgets it there. Avo b'meiniach. But if one actually deliberately places the stone on the chavis to be used as a lid, nasa kisei l'chavis. This stone has now become a kisei, a covering, a lid for the chavis. It's considered a kli. And he can actually move the stone itself. So we have Rabba, the name of Ami, who holds that simply placing a stone on the chavis, doing this maisa, does not render the stone, it does not classify it as a kli. Whereas according to Rav Yosef, the name of Rav Asi, yes, placing it, simply placing it on the chavis, purposely, deliberately, as to use as a cover, makes it into a kli. And removes its muksa status. Omar Rabba, said Rabba, Musvinan Ashmaita, and I asked the kasha on my teaching, on my shita. I just said that even a maisa can undo the muktzah status. We have a kasha from the Mishnah, from our Mishnah, Aevan Shebekiruya. So the stone sitting in this pumpkin, im malma of Einan fellas. If one fills the pail, one uses the kiruya, the stone remains intact, meaning it was fastened, it was tied to the pail. Then malma, one can fill with this pail because the stone right now is regarded as part of the pail. So this is a kasha on Rabba. I apologize. It was Rabba who was asked the kasha. Said, I asked the kasha on my shita. My shita was that even when doing a maisa, even when placing the stone on the chavis, which is a maisa, which shows, it indicates that he wants to use it as a kli, wants to use it as a lid, that does not negate its muksa status. That's not sufficient to change its muksa status, to remove its iser. As Rabba told us, even when he placed the stone on the chavis, it's the muksa. Not only is it muksa, the chavis itself becomes muksa. Says Rabba, I have a kasha from this Mishnah. This Mishnah clearly tells us that if you fasten the rock on this kiruya, on this pumpkin, he can use this pail because the oven has changed status. It's become part of the kli. So you see that doing a maisa can change the status, can make the stone into a kli. Says Rabba Loi, it's not so. There's no connection between two things. Hasam over there by the pumpkin, keeping the hatka, because since he fastened it, he tied it to the pumpkin, Shavi Doifin, he made it into the wall of the Doifin, certainly changed the status. As opposed to simply placing a rock on a chavis, that's not a significant enough masa to change the status, to nullify its muksa status. So certainly Rabbi agrees, if he does a significant act, it changes the status, such as tying a rock to that pumpkin. But simply placing the rock on the chavis, Rabba in the name of Rav Ami maintain, no, it is still considered to be mukt. Omer Rav Yosef, now Rav Yosef will bring a right to his shita, umasvinu nashmaiten, actually a kasha, umasvinu nashmaiten, I have a kasha, I asked the kasha on my shita. What's my shita? That a simple maisa, even a minimal maisa, like placing a stone on a chavis to be used as a lid, changes its muksa status is not regarded as a kli. I asked a kash on that. Because the Mishnah, the same Mishnah, says, im lav, if he had not fastened the rock to the pumpkin, eim amalamba. One cannot fill with this pumpkin because this rock is still regarded as muksa. So we see, even though he placed it in there, he did a maisa, it is still muksa, it's still a rock. So why is this different than placing a rock on a chavis? It's not so. There's no connection. Why? Hasam over there by the pumpkin, which is being used to fill, to draw water, it needs to be firmly in place. Given the lehatka, since he didn't fasten the rock, he knows that when he fills with this bucket, it's going to slip out. Be tuli batla. He was mevatel, meaning Rashi says that he was megaladas. He revealed his intention, meaning he demonstrated that he's not rendering a kli. He's not making it to a kli. He's not mashiv it. He's not regarding it as a kli. He's nullifying it. Because why didn't you tie it to the pumpkin properly? You know it's going to slip out. So in that case, certainly, since he indicated that he does not want it to become a kli, it won't be a kli. It'll stay muksa. As opposed to the case of the chavis. When he places the stone to cover the chavis, it's something stationary. It's going to stay intact. It's stay in place. He doesn't need to tie it. This is a true indication and a demonstration of his intention to use this Evan as a kli. And therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, that it is, therefore the Gemara says that it makes sense what Rabbi Yosef said in the name of Rav Asi, that Evan has a din of a kli and it's not no longer muktzah. Says the Gemara, b'maikim iflugi. Okay, so what's the basis of their machlekes between Rav Ami, who says that placing a stone on a chavis does not change its status, it's still considered to be muktzah, whereas Rav Asi maintains that it becomes a kli in this manner. Marsa v'beinah masa. Rav Ami holds that you need a significant maisa to give it a new status. And this is not considered to be a significant enough act. Simply placing it on the chavis, that's not enough. Umarsava, whereas Rav Asi holds, loy beinah masa, you don't need a significant act, simply placing it on the chavis, Vashi calls it a maisa, called away a minimal act that is sufficient as a demonstration of his intention. Meaning that Rav Ami holds, you need to actually transform the object, the chafetz. The change has to be discernible and obvious in the actual chafetz itself. For instance, like the tying of the event to the kiruya, which even Rav Ami agrees, it's a Mishnah, Rav Ami agrees that that's considered to be a kli, because he's actually transforming it, he's tying it, he's making it part of the kli. Whereas Rav Asi holds, merely indicating my true intention, demonstrating it with a minimal maisa, that's sufficient, because we need the indication of the machshava, of the person. You don't need to see it in the actual chafetz. You don't need to transform the form, the tzur of the chafetz. He merely needs to demonstrate with a maisa, and even a minimal maisa, that this is his true intention. He plans on using it as a kli, such as in the case where he places the evan on the chavis, he's using it as a lid, and therefore it's considered a kli. So once again, mar savar being a maisa, Rav Ami holds you need a significant act to change the status, or mar savar, whereas Rav Asi holds, loy being a maisa, we don't need a significant act. So Rav Asi holds that a mere indication and demonstration is sufficient. So, getting back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah gives us two dinim. If he tied that rock, it's a kli. All agree, because there was a serious maisa being done. Whereas the other halacha, which we're speaking about a loose rock, the Mishnah tells us it's muksa, all agree. Because even Rav Asi agrees that in this case, it's not a true demonstration of his intention, because he knows it's going to slip out. Why don't you tie it properly? Why don't you fasten it properly? Apparently, it's not a real, not a genuine demonstration of his intention to use this as a kli. So even Rav Asi agrees that this will remain muktzah as related in our Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. V'ozdu l'tamayu. Now both Rav Ami, who requires a true maisa, and Rav Asi a minimal maisa, are going along with their opinion stated elsewhere. The chiasa Rav Dimi, because Rav Dimi came, he said, Omer Chanina, name Rav Chanina, v'amila, some say Omer Rav Zeir, Omer Chanina. Pam achas, there was an incident. Halach Rebbe l'makam echad, Rebbe came to this place. So he went there and he found a matzah nidbach shel avonim. So he went to that place and he found a pile of stones which were reserved for construction. V'amal talmidim. And he told his talmidim, tzuu, go out v'chishvu k'dei sh'neishav aleim l'vachar. So go out and think, have the kavanah intention that we're going to sit on them tomorrow. Rabbi Lemaisa, Rabbi did not require them to do a Maisa. So this is the first approach. Rabbi Chanina maintains that there were no Maisa at all done here, even a Machshava is sufficient. Actually, we learned this enough. Nun, there's a Machlokes Tanoim. How do we change the status of a Muksa item? We have a Shita which says Machshava is sufficient. We have a Shita that requires even Maisa. So Rabbi Chanina is going along with the Shita that Machshava is sufficient. Now, upcoming in the Gemara here will be two Shitas. Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who both are following the opinion that a Maisa is needed. However, there's a difference between them. According to Rav Ami, a chosh of Maisa, significant Maisa is required, whereas according to Rav Asi, even a minimal Maisa is required, as we learned earlier. So once again, we have the story of Rebbe arrived at this place, saw those stones, which were muksa, he told his Talmidim to prepare them. We have three versions. According to Rav Chanina, he merely told them to have machshava. And that's sufficient. That gives it, that's mazman, that designates it for permissible use, and one can use it tomorrow. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Hitzrichan Rabbi Lemaisa. Rabbi required them to do a Maisa in order to designate it for tomorrow use. Mayamalu. Now what exactly? How exactly did he instruct them? What type of Maisa did he require? We have a machlik. Rav Ami Amar, Su'uva Limdum Amalu. He told them, look, today it's Erev Shabbos, go set them up so that we can use them on Shabbos because they're going to be mukta. Because Hazmana, with just a minimal Maisa, designating them just using a minimal maisa is not sufficient. They're going to be muktzah, so go set them up now, so you can go and sit on them tomorrow. We won't have to rearrange them tomorrow. So this is Rav Ami's approach. Rav Asi Amar, Tzu v'shiv shiv shmo mamalu. He told them to go ahead and wipe them from tit, from the dirt, from the clay. And this is considered to be a sufficient maisa to make them non-muktzah, to designate them for tomorrow's use. So we have the machlekes. Rav Ami requires a significant maisa, which was lacking in this case. Therefore, they're considered to be muktzah. So he told them, go arrange it now, so tomorrow we could just sit on them without having to rearrange them. And Rav Ami indeed is compatible with what he told us earlier, that a minimal maisa is not sufficient. For instance, like placing that rock on the chavis, that doesn't make it a kli. Whereas Rav Asi said, even merely wiping these stones clean is sufficient maisa to be regarded as a hazmana, as designation for permissible use. And therefore, they're considered to be a kli heter. Just as he told us earlier, merely placing the stone on the chavis is sufficient to make it into a kli. So in summary, regarding being mazmin, muktzah, designating muktzah, we have three shittas. According to Rav Chanina, a machshava is sufficient. According to Rav Asi, even an insignificant maaser like placing an evan on a chavis, wiping those stones clean. According to Rav Ami, a significant maaser is required. For instance, as the case of our Mishnah, actually tying the Evan to that Keruya, to that pumpkin, which indeed gives it, classifies it as a shame kli. Continues the Gemara. Itzmah we learned. Getting back to the story with Rebbe, that he told the Talmidim to prepare those items so they sit on them on Shabbos. Now, according to the version that we had, we were speaking about stones designated for construction. And we have a Shita which says that even Machshava is sufficient. We have a Shita which says a minimal Maisa is sufficient to grant them teres kli, to designate them for Shabbos. The Gemara is going to give us another two versions of that story. It's what we learned. Rav Yosef and Sholeimer, Sava Shol Kairos Hava. They were a pile of kairos of beams reserved for construction. Rav Yosef and Sholeimer, Gosher Shol Sfin Hava. It was actually this pole used for the Sfina, for the ship, to measure the depth of the water, to ensure that the ship is traveling in deep waters. So these were this was what they were going to sit on, this Gashash al Sfina. Explain Zigmar. Manda mer Gashash, now according to the Shita that says it was this Gashash, and even so, according to one opinion, a Machshava was sufficient to designate it, to make it non-Muktza. Kolshkin Savar, certainly if it would have been a pile of beams, then this type of designation would have been sufficient. Either a machshava, according to the other shita, a minimal maisa. However, manda amar savar. However, according to the shita that says that we're speaking about the pile of beams, only in that case is a machshava sufficient. According to the other shita, a minimal maisa. Avo goshesh, but this goshesh kaptele, he's particular about his machbana that doesn't get ruined, doesn't get bent, and therefore, if it would have been the goshesh, all would agree that merely a machshava would not be sufficient, or a minimal maisa would not be sufficient in this case. Continues the Gemara, Zmeir Sheikshura, the Mishnah told us that this vine branch, which was tied to the tafiach, this container, one can use it for filling, for drawing water. Now, why is the Mishnah speaking about tied? kshura in. If only if it's tied, loy kshura loy, but otherwise you can't use it, even though it's vine. Rashi explains it's properly formed in a way which you can use the vine for filling, to hold on to the pail, and he had a machshava to use it for that purpose. So why does it need to be tied? Are you going to say that our Mishnah is not following the shita of Shimon Gamliel? We mentioned this earlier, there's machlekes tanaim. To render something non-muksa, do we need a maisa? Or perhaps even a machshava sufficient? If Shimon Gamliel holds, even a machshava sufficient. This Mishnah appears not to be going like him. The son, as we learned, Chariya shel dekel, palm branches, shegodin le'etzim, which he harvested for firewood. Now they're mukta. V'nimlech alein li'yishiv, but he changed his mind, he decided to use them for sitting. Tzorach liksha. He needs to tie them into a bundle, perhaps this makes them more suitable for sitting. So a maisa is required. He needs to indicate the actual object itself that's designated for this purpose. V'b'shim gam li'lo, I mean, no! Ain't liksha, he doesn't need to tie it, merely having a mind is sufficient. So why now Mishnah does he need to tie the vine? Amar Rav Sheshes Afilu Teima Rav Shimon Gamliel. Even if the Mishnah will be following that Shita Hachamai Eskina, you know what we're speaking about? But Mechaberes Bavir, this branch is still attached to its father, to the vine. And therefore all agree that unless he actually ties it to the Tafiach, it retains its Muksa status. Says the Gemara, one second, then we have another problem. Yachi, if that's the case, Kom Shtavish Mechaber Lekarka. He's using something which is attached to the ground. And the Rabbanon, well, may not use something which is attached to the ground. Can't use part of a tree. It says, well, Lamata Megimel, this vine, this branch, was actually growing within three tefachim to the ground. And therefore, it's not included in that issue. Rav Ashi Amar, Afilu Teimu Betlusha. Even if we're speaking about a branch which is detached from the tree. So why does it need to be tied? Gzera Shem Yiktem. There's a gzera, perhaps he might be tempted to cut it down to size. It's soft and pliable. He might cut it down to size to be suitable for his purpose, and therefore the Chum disallowed using this branch unless it's actually tied to the fiach, which will preclude this concern. Continues the Gemara, Pkaka Chaloy, we have this window shutter, where Koncha Blezer, you can only use it, you can only close the window with this shutter if it's kosher, if it's tully, if it's tied and hung to the building. Where Koncha Rabbanon, there's no concern. Explains the Gemara, Omar Rabba Rachan Rabbi Yechanan. What is the basis, what is the reason of the Machlekes? Hakol Moedim, all agree. One can't initiate, he can't go ahead and form an oil arai. An oil is a roof, even if it's of a temporary nature. For instance, Rashi says a machtzela, a mat which he's placing on four poles, he can't go ahead and form that on Yom Tov, ain't so chlein b'Shabbos, and certainly not on Shabbos. So initially forming this is us. Lo yinechleku, when then is there the machlekes? Ela lo yisif. It's only machlekes when he's going to add, make a temporary addition to an oil, such as in the case of the shutter which he's placing onto the oil. It's a temporary thing, it's just a temporary shutter, it comes in and out. So he's adding this temporary addition to the existing roof. Speaking about a roof of a building, but this addition is arai, is temporary. Now we have a machlekes. Shabbat zoy me'ein mo'isifim b'yom tov, or may not add in yom tov, ve'ein tzorchlein b'shabbat, and certainly not on Shabbos. Therefore, Rav Lezer requires that it be tied, it be suspended, in which case it appears like it belongs there. It doesn't appear like he's actually adding and initiating something and bringing something and adding to the oil. He's simply restoring, replacing, returning the shutter which belongs there. There's no hoysofa of oil arai. One may add a temporary oil on Shabbos, and tzorchlein b'yontem, certainly on yontem. So therefore, according to Chacham, there's no concern here. This pakaka chaloin is merely considered to be a hisofa oil harai. He's making this, he's adding something which is an oil harai, and therefore it's mutter without any concerns. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We have the pasuk regarding tanner. The pasuk says tanner v'kiraim yutatz, indicating that the tanner, in order for it to be mekabel tumah, needs to be attached to the ground, needs to have that ability of yutatz, of demolition. We have the other part of the pasuk, Tmeim Yulachem, which seems to include even a Tana which is tallish, detached from the ground. So if you do these approaches, it depends. The Hesek Rishon, the initial heating of the oven, needs to be done high quality. It needs to be done when the oven is attached to the ground, in which it's properly heated with the ground, the heat is intense, it properly renders this Tana as a Tana. And once you do that, you're good to go. Even if it's removed from the ground and used, suspended anywhere, it's still Mekabel Tumah. Whereas according to Rabbanon, a Tana which is tolish is actually held in high regard. It's like an ordinary cleaning, therefore it's makabel tumah. So the initial heating can take place even if it was detached. The pasuk which describes a connected tanner is telling us even if it's connected to the ground, it will be makabel tumah. The Gemara told us the chromius of the machzelus, the splinters of the mat, are useful and they're mutter. The remnants of the talisois are not useful, they're too small to be used, and therefore they're muktzah. Regarding the broken pieces of a tanner, which can still be used somewhat in for a baking function, according to Rav Meir, they're mutter, they're not muktzah, according to Rav Yehuda, since they bake in a way which doesn't resemble the baking process of an ordinary oven, they're considered to be muktzah. We learned regarding designating something and making it non-muktzah, according to Rav Chanina, machshav is sufficient. Point to Rav Asi, a minimal maisa, such as placing the stone on the chavis, such as wiping clean those stones, according to Rav Ami, a significant maisa is required, such as actually tying the stone onto the pumpkin, or as we said, like tying together the firewood. We concluded with the branch, which is tied to the container, and the machlekes in Lezer Rabban regarding hoisafa on oil arai on Shabbos and Yontif.